sahanavavatu, sahanau bhunaktu, sahavidyan karavavahai, tejasvinavadhitamastu mavidvishavahai. Om shanti, shanti, shanti. Om. Good. Welcome back. Welcome also to the students attending these classes online. We continue our study of Uddhava Gita. It's been quite a pleasure. For me, it's the first time, as you know, that I'm teaching this particular text, and it's delightful. In chapter 11, which we began just last week, we have an opportunity to kind of review something we saw in chapter 10 of Bhagavad Gita. In chapter 10, Arjuna asks Sri Krishna to describe his vibhutis, his glories. In chapter 11, Sri Krishna reveals his cosmic form, but in a prior chapter, chapter 10, Arjuna asks Sri Krishna to describe all of his glories. And Sri Krishna concludes by saying, he goes on for verse after verse after verse, and concludes by saying, my glories are infinite. We can't keep going on and on and on like this. So at some point he stops. Anyway, he restarts here in a different context where Uddhava asks Sri Krishna the very same question that Arjuna asks, and that's what we will see as we pick up the thread. Very good. And let's continue. Satada purusha. No. Satada. You have to get the right meter. Satada purusha vyagro. Satada purusha vyagro. Yukya me pratibodhitaha. Yukya me pratibodhitaha. Abhyabhashata mamevam, yathatvam ranamurdhani. Saha, tada, then, saha, purusha vyagraha. And here Sri Krishna is telling Arjuna about, telling Uddhava about what happened during the lead-up to the Mahabharata battle. We saw at the end of the last class, Sri Krishna actually gave us a quick summary of chapter 1 very nicely, and maybe beginning of chapter 2, yes. He gave in just a few verses, setting the scene in the Bhagavad Gita, where the scene in which Arjuna asked Sri Krishna to describe his glory. So having set that scene, Sri Krishna is now talking about Arjuna, saha purusha vyagraha, that lion among men, tada then, pratibodhitaha, being enlightened, being informed. Remember, Arjuna was really, really confused at the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita. He was overwhelmed by his emotional reaction, but Sri Krishna says he was pratibodhita. He was enlightened, we'll say, me yukya, by my teachings. And then Arjuna abhyabhashata, Arjuna asked mom, me, evam, the same question, in the same way. Arjuna asked the same question, yathatvam, the same question that you have asked about my divine glories. But Arjuna asked Rana Murdhani at the very beginning of the battle. So making that reference to Arjuna. And with that reference, we now plunge into a long but wonderful narration of the glories of Sri Krishna. We'll spend quite a bit of time on the first verse, and then probably we'll go quite a bit more quickly through the many verses describing those glories. But in the very first verse, we can see what we're meant, how we're meant to use these teachings. And we'll see that in some detail. Let's see that verse now.
Aham atmod bhavami sham. Aham atmod bhavami sham. Bhutanam suhradishwaraha. Bhutanam suhradishwaraha. Aham sarvani bhutani. Aham sarvani bhutani. Tesham stit yudbhavap. Yayaha Tesham Stit Yubhavat.
Good. So with this verse, the narration of Sri Krishna's Vibhutis begins. And he says, Aham Atma Uddhava. You have to bring that word out. Uddhava, O Uddhava. Aham, I am Atma, the Self. Amisham Bhutanam, of all these beings, of all beings, I am the Self, I am Sukhrit, the Friend, and Ishwaraha, the Lord. All these words need to be understood properly, because each of these verses are meant for this whole narration of Sri Krishna's glories, as in chapter 10 of the Bhagavad Gita. Same here in chapter 11 of Uddhava Gita. There's a purpose. And if we just read verses without knowing what we're supposed to do with these teachings, it's not very helpful. This narration of Vibhutis. Vibhuti means glory. This narration has a twofold purpose. First of all, for meditation. So when you meditate, if you choose... One of many ways to meditate is to meditate on Sri Krishna. And he gives instructions here on in what manner you should meditate. So you meditate on Sri Krishna means what? To meditate on him holding a flute with he's got this particular posture. It's a little hard to make out with the clothes on. But it's called Tribhanga. Three curves. So the idea is that from the feet to the hips is in one direction. And then from the hips to the head is in the other direction. So they call that Tribhanga, his posture. So when he says, when these verses are for meditation, are you supposed to meditate on this curvy representation of Sri Krishna? That's not what he just said. He said, Aham Atma. I am the Self. Amisham Bhutanam, of all these creatures. If Sri Krishna is the Self of all creatures, are you a creature? To use the American word, are you a critter? How's that? Creature becomes critter in American English. You are a living being. So Sri Krishna abides in every being as consciousness. As the consciousness which makes your mind work, the consciousness which makes you see, hear, taste, smell, and touch, the consciousness because of which you can think, because of which you have emotions, the consciousness because of which you're aware of what's happening right now, in this lecture hall. That consciousness is Sri Krishna's presence. We call it that divine nature. Divine nature means this, consciousness. The consciousness immediately present in this experience, the consciousness which gives you sentiency, makes you an awareful being. And that's what he says here. He says that I am not only the Atma, the conscious self of all beings, I am also Sukhrit, friend. Friend is the one who, in this case, the one who blesses you with sentiency. We are conscious beings. That consciousness we can consider a blessing of Sri Krishna. And then he says, Ishwaraha. This has to be properly understood. All words have to be understood in context. You can't just look them up in a dictionary. The meaning of every word depends on what's being talked about. Yes, Ishvara conventionally means Lord, but in this context, Lord as the consciousness that dwells within you, there's a metaphor that you understand that needs to be understood here. Think of the, kings in ancient India could be addressed as Ishvara. They were the Lord of the kingdom. And as the Lord of the kingdom, everyone in the kingdom had a responsibility to serve the king. So in that kingdom, Lord means the one who was served by all the people of the kingdom, all the subjects of the kingdom. That's the metaphor we have to apply here. Ishvara dwells within you, as consciousness. That consciousness is Lord in the sense that everything else that you have is meant to serve consciousness. Your legs and feet function for the sake of that inner Lord, the consciousness, the conscious being. Your arms and hands are subjects, so to speak, for that Lord, that consciousness that dwells within. Your powers of seeing, hearing, taste, smell, and touch are all like subjects in the kingdom. Similarly, your mental faculties, your memory, your intelligence, your emotions, all of these are metaphorically subjects in service to the Lord who is at consciousness within. Do you see what I mean about the importance of a contextual understanding? If you just translate it as Lord and move on, you really don't get it. We need to spend some time and understand this. So I said, let's see the second half, and then I'll talk about, there's a second aspect. Aham sarvani bhutani. Sri Krishna says, I am all things that exist. Sarvani, all bhutani, all existent things. Sri Krishna says, I am, meaning I am manifest in the form of all existent beings. Notice I didn't say sentient beings, conscious beings, because this table is not sentient. If it were, it would probably complain that I'm banging on it right now. He says, stop it, stop it. Anyway, it's not a sentient being. Sorry, I'm being a little silly. Does that mean Sri Krishna is not present in this table? Look at this. Sri Krishna is equally present in the table as Sri Krishna is present within me. Sri Krishna is consciousness. Consciousness has no edge, no boundary, no limit. Consciousness is inside you. Is consciousness not outside you? Just like space. Space is inside this room. Space is also outside this room. There is nowhere where space is not. That's why we say space is sarva vyapaka, all pervasive. So just as space is all pervasive, Sri Krishna as consciousness, similarly, all pervasive. All pervasive, equally present in an insentient thing and a sentient thing. And he says, Tesham, for all those sentient things, I am the Stiti, Udbhava, and Apyaya. Some of it you can make out. Stiti, actually start with Udbhava, the creator, Stiti, sustainer, and Apyaya, the so-called destroyer, the one unto whom everything returns at the end of time. Sri Krishna describes how all beings are manifest by him, all beings are sustained by him, and all beings return unto him. Now, we have to see something a little bit deeper here. But before we do, I said there were, each verse has a twofold purpose. One is you can use all of this for meditation. And everything in this verse can be used for meditation. But these teachings can also be used when you're not meditating. In fact, what a shame if the only time you use these teachings is in meditation. What about the rest of the time? What about throughout the day? When you're driving your car, when you're at work, when you're at home watching TV, these teachings are meant to be used all the time. And here's an example. Sri Krishna says, Aham Sarvani Bhutani, I am manifest in all things. So if you're what a lousy example. If you're watching the television at home, the television is a manifestation of Sri Krishna. What a terrible example. But that's what he's saying. Everything exists as a manifestation of Sri Krishna. Now, it's a little hard to see Sri Krishna manifest in the form of the television, but there are many other places where it's pretty obvious that Sri Krishna is manifest in these forms. You go outside at night. Actually, not on a clear night, which means not in central New Jersey, because there's enough haze in the sky and enough, they call it light pollution, that we can't really see the stars. But you all know what it is to be in a remote area, look up in the sky, and you see this inky deep vastness with all these gazillions of little stars shining and blinking. When you look up into that sky, it's hard not to think of a greater reality, of a supreme being. And if you are studying Uddhava Gita, I would say it's hard not to think of Sri Krishna when you look up at that dark sky. Or if you look at a beautiful scene, if you go into a park and you see all the flowers growing, especially in the springtime. You see all these nice trail and all the trees and all these blooming flowers. In that natural beauty, it's not hard to see Sri Krishna is manifest as all of that. Little harder in the television set, but not so hard. Actually, even in the television set, I'm going to bore you just for 2 minutes. If you were to take apart your television set and examine the screen, you would be amazed by the technology that goes on to make the screen of a modern TV. Layer after layer, there are probably a dozen different layers, each layer having very specific purposes, each layer full of technology to give you millions of little dots of information on your screen. If you could look at that with a microscope, you'd be amazed. Arguably, even in your television set, you can see the glories of nature. Imagine putting all that stuff together and being able to see whatever is on your television. If you really look at it from that perspective, your television set, from a technological point of view, is every bit as beautiful as that night sky. And in that way, you can appreciate Sri Krishna's presence equally in the beautiful night sky and even in the technology of your television set. Takes a little more effort, of course, with the television set. With the night sky, it's very simple. So as we go along, we're going to get many different descriptions. Sri Krishna says, I am this, I am that, I am this, I am that, I am this, I am that. And in each case, in each verse, we can use those teachings in both these ways. We can use them for meditation. And as I said, Sri Krishna is present within you as consciousness. So, what is the main form of meditation taught in the Bhagavad Gita is to close your eyes and meditate on Sri Krishna's presence within you. That's what he teaches in Chapter 6, Dhyana Yoga of the Bhagavad Gita. So the main form of meditation in Bhagavad Gita, meditate on Sri Krishna's sacred presence within you as consciousness, and that's how this list of vibhutis begin. Aham Atma Amisham Bhutanam. So each of these verses can be used for meditation, and then I just gave a second purpose, and that is in your daily life. To appreciate Sri Krishna's presence, manifestation in all things. Okay, and which means in the beautiful night sky, on that flower, on that trail with all the flowers, and even in your television. What a silly example. Now, there's something in this last line, a little bit of Vedanta that I think we really need to understand Sri Krishna's narration, because he says, Aham Sarvani Bhutani, I am manifest in all things, which means I am the underlying, let me use some Vedantic language. When Sri Krishna says, I am manifest as all things, what he means is, I am the underlying reality because of which everything exists. That's our Vedantic language. But then in the last line, he says, Aham stiti udbhava apyayaha. I am the intelligence who creates, who sustains, and destroys. That's not stuff. The third line talked about, Sri Krishna said, I am the underlying stuff because of which everything exists. And in the last line, he says, I am the intelligent order according to which everything functions and exists. These are two very different perspectives, and this is a really important Vedantic subject matter. So it's a big, big, big topic. I'd like to, and many of you have heard it before, you may not have heard it before, I'd like to present it very briefly. And briefly with one word. How's that? You can't be more brief. Of course, in Sanskrit, you can have compound words. And compound words, you'll be surprised. In technical commentaries, a compound word can begin here, go to the end of the line, continue in the next line. One word in a scholarly text. That's not unusual. So I'm going to give you one word. Not that long, but long enough that will help us understand this last part. We'll need that light on, please. Thank you. All right. One word. One word is, let's do this. I'll give you English in just a moment. Abhinna. Nimitta. Upadana Karanam. How's that for one word? Abhinna Nimitta Upadana Karanam. And the meaning is there is an Upadana Karanam. Karanam is cause. There is a material cause because of which the universe exists, like clay is the material because of which a pot exists. So here in this case, Sri Krishna says, I am the underlying reality because of which everything exists. Then he also says, I am the stiti, udbhava, and apyaya karta. I am the one who creates, sustains, and destroys. To create something and sustain something and to do anything like at all implies knowledge, intelligence. In fact, in the case of a pot, it's not just clay, right? Clay is just a lump of mud. But someone with intelligence had to make that pot into, I'm sorry, make the clay into a pot. So there's a second factor in any creation, and that is nimitta. We'll call it intelligence. So the cause, do you know what? Karana means cause, but in our current context, we could actually supply the word creator. Karanam does not mean creator, but in this context, it's a little bit helpful. The creator, who is the material cause for the universe, and the creator, who is the intelligent cause for the creator, and I'm going to give some explanations of this, and one who is abhinna, non-separate. How about simply both? It means non-separate, but since we're talking about two things, he is both. He is simultaneously the intelligent cause and the material cause. Okay, this is very complicated Vedanta. I'm going to give it to you using some metaphors to make it really simple. And one metaphor we've already gave, and that is in the pot. For the pot, there is material, a material cause. The material pot, the material cause for the pot is clay. There is also the potter, who's the source of the intelligence. But here's the problem. This intelligence is different than the material. You got one potter and you got a pile of clay. They're different. They're not abhinna, non-separate. Let's say non-different. So then that shows a limitation of our pot metaphor. So let's give another metaphor. This is a metaphor given in the, I think, Mundaka Upanishad. Urna Nabhi is a name for a spider in Sanskrit. It has a nice meaning. The one whose nabhi, navel, is full of urna, wool. This is how they imagined a spider in ancient times, that this filament, this string, thread, was coming out of their... Do spiders have navels? If I understand a little bit of anatomy, navel is where the umbilical cord was attached. Only mammals, I think, have those umbilical cords. So I don't think spiders have navels. That's okay. I think in ancient times, they didn't quite understand all these details of biology. We give them a break, so to speak. Anyway, so the what's important about the spider is that the spider is the source of the material for the spider. Creates a web, obviously. The web is the creation of the spider. And the spider is the source of the material, the thread. Also, the spider is the source of the intelligence. Look at a web. It's pretty complicated. And these spiders, in spite of their minuscule brains, you know how big is a spider's head? Not much. But that head is enough to contain enough intelligence for that spider to make the web. So the spider is both the material cause and the intelligent cause for the web, both. But the spider is different from the web. We still have a problem. We still have some difference. Yes, the spider is both the intelligent cause and a material cause, but the spider is separate or different from its creation. How would it sound if we said that, like a spider? Oh, this is an interesting metaphor. The spider, actually the Mundaka says, the spider srijate grinate cha, the words that come in the Upanishad, is the spider spins the web and then consumes it. If you've ever seen a damaged web, a spider will eat the threads and and then recycle the material in its body and then spin another web. So they I guess the ancient sages didn't know that spiders didn't have navels, but they understood that spiders would eat the threads to recycle the material. So the problem, however, is that a spider can spin a web and then desert it. You've seen many webs with no spiders. So how about if we use that as a metaphor for Ishvara? Ishvara created the universe, the heavens and the earth, and then he went on holiday. Doesn't sound right. So our idea, our understanding of Ishvara is one from whom the universe is not separate. Notice the web is quite separate from the spider. We need one more metaphor to show a universe, to show a creator who's the source of the material, a creator who is the source of the intelligence, and a creator from whom the creation is non-separate. And fortunately, the rishis gave us one more metaphor. So we started with the pot metaphor, then we went on to the spider metaphor, and we arrive at our third and final metaphor, which is that of a dream. When you dream at night, you are the creator of the dream world. You are Ishvara. In fact, you create the dream world, you sustain it for a while, and when you wake up, where does that dream world go? Back to you. So you are the creator, sustainer, destroyer of your dream world. It's quite a good metaphor, but more than that, everything in your dream world is made of what? It's made of you. Your own dream stuff, your own consciousness, your own sentiency, your mind, it's made of you. So you are the stuff out of which everything in your dream is made. And everything in your dream is made according to your intelligence, which means according to things you've experienced in when you were awake, and according to your imagination. So we imagine various things. In your dream, you can fly. Many people have that experience of flying in your dreams. It's because you are the source of the intelligence. You are the one who gets to decide the laws of nature for your dream. And you can decide that you can fly. You can also decide that you can get killed and still live. You know, we do all of this strange stuff. We do in dreams regularly, and it's because you are in charge of the dream world. You are the intelligent order of the dream world. And most significantly, that dream world is utterly non-separate from you. That dream, then, gives the best metaphor. We can spend hours with this, but I said we'll do it very briefly here. Every creature in that dream world exists because of you, functions because of you, and is utterly non-separate from you. That's not so hard to understand. This is some very deep Vedantic teaching. It's a very technical expression that describes Ishvara, or they would use the term Saguna Brahman. These are just all technical expressions. But you can understand this, and understanding this is the key to know how Sri Krishna describes himself. So with this understanding in mind, let's go back and see the second half of the verse again. Very good. Where he says, Aham Sarvani Bhutani. I am the reality because of which everything exists. clay for the pot, like thread for the web, or like dream stuff, you, your consciousness, for your dream world. Then he says, Tesham Stiti Udbhava Apyayaha. He says, I am also the intelligence that governs the world. The intelligence because of which everything comes into existence, Udbhava. The intelligence because of which everything continues to exist, Stiti. And the intelligence because of which everything returns to Ishvara at the end of time, Apyaya. So this is the key. It's a long word. It's a little technical, but it includes everything. And the shortcut for you is you don't have to remember all these little bits and pieces of the pot and pot maker and the spider and the nabhi and all of this stuff. All you need to do is reflect on that dream metaphor. Let's just spend 1 minute on that, and then we'll proceed with these verses. The universe is not a dream, first of all. This is a metaphor, right? When somebody says a poem is as lovely as a tree, it's a metaphor, right? A poem is not a tree. A tree is a tree. A poem is a poem. So when we say that the world is like a dream, it means that the world is not a dream, right? This is how metaphors work. The world is not a dream, but it's a helpful metaphor. And it's a metaphor that helps us understand the Creator. Just as you create your dream world, sustain your dream world, when you wake up, it goes back to you. In the same way, the God of the cosmos, Ishvara, who we can call Sri Krishna is the one who creates, sustains, and destroys the world. And just as everything in your dream world is made of you, it's inside of you, and it's non-separate from you. All that is true in a dream. Whatever you dream about is made of you. It exists within you, and it is non-separate from you. In the same way, you and me and this table and everything else, we exist because we are made of Krishna. We are, spacing out a little bit, made of Krishna. We exist inside of Ishvara or Sri Krishna, and we exist non-separate from that Ishvara. It's all there in that dream metaphor. If you really want to understand Ishvara in a very profound way, and I'll make a final comment here, otherwise we'll go on this forever. When we're children, we have certain ideas of who Ishvara is. We think, at one point, we think God is Ganesha, with the big trunk and the big belly and the elephant head and all of that stuff. And then we get a little bit older and we come to understand that Ganesha is a form of Ishvara. Ishvara doesn't really have an elephant head. And then maybe we get a more sophisticated idea of Lord Vishnu with four arms or Sri Krishna or whatever. But even that, we are meant, how to put this? We are meant to eventually outgrow all these limited worldly concepts of who and what is Ishvara. Extremely helpful when we're children. Any children who could understand what is abhinna nimitta upadana karana? Not for children. No way. But here's the point that I'm kind of gently leading up to, and that is, you're not children anymore, which means it's time to appreciate Ishvara as a bin. You don't have to know the words, But you have to know that Ishvara is more than Sri Krishna as a form. Ishvara is more than Lord Vishnu as a form, or a Shiva. These are all helpful representations of Ishvara. And there's nothing wrong if you, in praying to Krishna, praying to Shiva, praying to Vishnu. It's not wrong, but it's time for us to have a more mature adult understanding. That's the point. If there's nothing wrong, and I worship Sri Krishna all the time, so there's nothing wrong in worshiping a given form of Ishvara, but it's time for us, we're not children anymore, we're adults, which means we can understand this complicated thing, abhinna nimitta upadana karana, which is not hard when you stay with that dream metaphor. So it is as though the universe is Ishvara's dream. It is as though we are all characters in Ishvara's dream. It is as though Ishvara dreams us into existence, sustains us, and then brings us back. It is as though that we exist in Ishvara's dream, utterly non-separate from that Ishvara. So this is a more mature way of understanding. Okay, now, I warned you that we would spend quite a bit of time on this verse. Most of the other verses will probably go rather quickly through, because now we've got our firm footing of foundation, as it were, so we can move on. Let's continue. Aham gatir gatimatam
kala kalayatam aham kala kalayatam aham gunanam chapyaham samyam gunanam chapyaham samyam gunin yautpati ko gunaha gunin gautapti gunin yautpati ko gunaha. Good. Aham gatihi gatimatam. Gatimatam, for things that move, I am gati. I am their movement. I am the movement of all that moves. Now, this is poetry. It's also a little abstract. This verse is mostly about seeing Sri Krishna in nature. Here's an example. When you look up in the sky and see a bird soaring without flapping its wings, how do they do that? They go around and around and around. Once in a while, they flap their wings, but mostly they're just soaring on the wind currents, on the air currents. It is amazing that birds can do that. And here's the point. This is a glory of nature, which is whose glory? That's the point. That's exactly the point. So when you see a glory of nature, like these birds soaring around, these are Sri Krishna's glories, that there should be such birds that can fly around like that. Another example he gives is kalaha kalayatam aham. Aham, I am kala. Kala here doesn't mean time exactly. It has more to do with the unfoldment of karma. I've translated it as destiny because it's one word. Unfoldment of karma according to whatever you've accumulated. Anyway, it's a little complex. So I am kala, the unfoldment of karma, kalayatam. For those who, literally, for those who fight, for those who compete, for conquerors. And here a reference perhaps to the Bhagavad Gita. So for Yudhishthira, Bhima, Arjuna, these mighty warriors, for Dronacharya, Karna, all of these great warriors, Sri Krishna, and they are all Kalayatam for them. For all these great warriors, Sri Krishna says, Aham Kalaha, I am their destiny, I am the one. In the Bhagavad Gita, we use a proper word here, karma pala data. I am the giver of the fruits of the results. So for Yudhishthira, Bhima, and Arjuna, because of their good deeds, they got good results. And for Karna, Duryodhana, and the others, because of their harmful deeds, they got undesired. They lost the war, as you know very well. Then we get some more examples. Here, examples from what philosophers call cosmology. Cosmology is the study of the cosmos, the universe. Not through telescopes, but more through understanding. And he says, Sri Krishna says here, that gunanam cha api aham. We have to find these words. Aham, I am. I am the samyam, the equal state, the state of equanimity, gunanam, for all gunas. This is a reference, actually, to the teachings of Sankhya, who have a very detailed explanation of how the universe came into existence. In modern science, we have this understanding that the Big Bang went bang. Big Bang shouldn't make any other sound, right? Shouldn't go pop. Big Bang should have a big bang. Anyway, if you've ever looked at some of the scientific articles on it, there is a sequence of events that takes place after the Big Bang. So first, it'll really be boring if I start to explain that to you. I won't. It starts with a period of expansion, and then there are not even any particles at that point. It's just energy. As the energy starts to cool down and particles start to form, as particles then form atoms, atoms form molecules, molecules form hydrogen gas condenses into suns, suns light up the sky. Anyway, this is all the sequence of, I should do it in the other way, left to right for you. So starting with the Big Bang, all of these things proceed. Sankhya has a different theory. Of course, Sankhya didn't understand Einstein's equations and all of that. So in the ancient worldview, everything is made not of matter and energy, as we think. Everything in ancient times they thought was made of gunas, sattva, rajas, tamas. Not as mental qualities. We often use these three terms to describe mental qualities, which is fine. They do mean mental qualities, but they are also the constituents of matter. Everything is made of sattva, rajas, and tamas. Instead of particles like neutrons and protons, sattva, rajas, and tamas. And here's the theory. Before the universe became manifest, like before the Big Bang went bang, the three gunas were present in massive quantity, but they were in a state of equilibrium. Samyam here means equilibrium. That means an equal amount of sattva, equal amount of rajas, equal amount of tamas, and completely intermixed. So massive amount of sattva, rajas, tamas in equal amounts and completely intermixed. This is a condition called guna samyam. And then the equilibrium gets disturbed. What disturbs the equilibrium? Karma. Not your karma, but the collective karma of the entire universe. The collective karma of every living being. At this point, of course, where are those living beings? They don't exist, but they are in an
unmanifest form, like prior to rebirth. You exist, but in an unmanifest form. So before the universe sprang into existence, all living beings were in an unmanifest form, and their collective karma disturbed the equilibrium between the three gunas, and what happened next? Bang. Switching to the modern scientific idea. That describes the very beginning of time and space and causality and you and me and everything else. The beginning of everything. Sri Krishna says then, I am the guna. Gunanamcha apya api samyam. I am the three gunas in that state of equilibrium prior to the creation of the world. He continues, I am gunani autpatikaha gunaha. I am the gunas which are autpatiki natural. I am the natural gunas gunini in all things, including this thing. This is back what we said before, that material reality, the underlying stuff because of which everything exists. Sri Krishna says, I am that. Let's see just one more verse and then we'll continue next time. He says, Guninam, Guninam Hapyaham Sutram, Guninam Hapyaham Sutram, Mahatam Chamahanaham, Mahatam Chamahanaham, Sukshmanam Hapyaham Jivo, Sukshmanam Hapyaham Jivo, Durjaya Namaham Manaha, Durjaya Namaham Manaha. Breaking the words apart, Guninam Api Aham Sutram. Aham Sutram, I am the source, Guninam, for all the gunas and everything made of gunas. That would seem so abstract if you didn't have that dream metaphor. Here, look at this. He says, I am the source of the gunas. I am the source of everything made of gunas. Now that sounds at first like very abstract philosophy. I'm the source of gunas. I'm the source of everything made of gunas. But now reflect on our dream metaphor. You see how the dream metaphor makes it much more real, much more tangible? This isn't really philosophy. This is a description of the reality in which we live. But we need a little help in understanding it. Then he says, Mahatam cha mahan aham. I am mahan of the mahatam. This is another technical reference. In that Sankhya theory, those three gunas, which exist in equal quantity and are completely intermixed in that state of equilibrium, suppose you say, where did that come from? You can ask, and Sankhya has an answer. That which it came from, they call Mahat. Don't ask me to explain further. Except for our Vedantins, Mahat is a little bit like Hiranyagarbha in the Vedantic tradition. I'm not going to get into the technical. This is Vedantic cosmology. If you want to get really heavy into this stuff, that's what it is. We don't want to go that deeply. So the three gunas in equilibrium exists because of Mahat. Mahat exists because of Prakriti. This is all their fancy doctrine of cosmology, of creation. So Sri Krishna says, I am the Mahat of Mahat. What? That's what he said. I am that because of which the gunas exist. Look at the whole thing. I am that because of which the gunas exist.
I am that because of which things made of gunas exist, and I am that because of which the gunas themselves exist. Covering all the bases, as they say in American English, he is Mahat, the creator of the gunas. He is the gunas, the creator of all that exists in the universe. Then he goes on to say, Sukshmanam api aham jivaha. And I don't like my translation here. Let me change it. Aham jivaha. I am the consciousness. Sukshmanam. Of all things that have a subtle body, of all living beings. I think that's a much more appropriate translation. I am the consciousness of all living beings. And the last one, I like this last one. He says, Durjaya nam aham manaha. Durjaya, some of you know, means that which is not difficult to conquer, but that which can't be conquered, that which is unconquerable. Like if you or I want to climb Mount Everest, a few healthy people, young people can do that, not me, and I don't think most of us here. I don't think anyone is quite, I don't know, you might be, I don't know, I could be wrong on that. Maybe you can do it, I know I can't. Anyway, so for you and me, Mount Everest is unconquerable. Good. He gives a different example here, though. His example of unconquerable is manas, mind. He says, Durjayanam, amongst all things that are unconquerable, like Mount Everest, he says, I am that which is more unconquerable than Mount Everest, which is manas, mind. Why would he call mind unconquerable? Well, some of you know experientially how difficult it is to make your mind quiet when you try to meditate. But I promise you, if you stay with it and meditate long enough using proper techniques, you will be able to meditate. But yet, the mind is unconquerable in some different ways. For example, suppose someone, happens a lot throughout history. Suppose someone is saying something against the government, and the government says, you are treasonous. We are putting you in jail for your entire life. So the government puts this rebel, in jail for their entire life. They have conquered the person's body. Have they conquered the person's mind by putting them in jail? They continue to criticize and curse the government. Some people have written books in jail, and even books critical of, I think, Mandela was famous for having written. So, in fact, Mandela, what a nice example. You know, so South Africa had lived under this apartheid for so long, and they put him in jail so they could lock up Mandela. They couldn't lock up his mind. And in fact, from jail, he continued to inspire resistance to apartheid. Then, you know, suppose the government goes further than that. So after, I forget, 20, 30 years, Mandela eventually was let out of jail. Suppose the government decided to kill him. Thank goodness they didn't. But suppose the government executes someone like Mandela. Then they say they've not only killed the body, but they've also killed the mind. Is that true? It's not true, because what Mandela said and taught, his ideas lived on. Sure, you can kill a person. You can kill the person. You cannot kill the ideas, the intelligence of the person. And that's why Sri Krishna says, what is more unconquerable than Mount Everest is your your own mind. Put you in jail, your mind continues to be free. Even if you are killed, your ideas live on. Memories of you will live on. Memories of what you did and said while you were alive will live on. In that sense, mind is unconquerable. So here, Sri Krishna continues to say, I am manifest in all these ways as that which is made of gunas, as the gunas themselves, as the source of the gunas, as consciousness in you and me, and Sri Krishna's present manifest as our powerful mind. So this is just a few examples you've given. We've only seen three verses of his vibhutis. Many more to come. We'll see that in our next class. Quick announcements. Tomorrow we have our Vedanta class, Upadesha Sahasri, brilliant text of Shankara, at 10 a.m. Come and join us. And then we've moved our satsang to the evening, 6 p.m. We sit outside underneath the trees. It's just delightful on these warm summer evenings. So come and join us at 6 p.m. for satsang tomorrow. Bring your questions. Also, by the way, I want to thank everyone who stayed back to help with gardening last week. The front of the ashram, the entranceway here, looks just excellent. You did such a nice job. Those of you who can stay back today, we need to do some work in back, the garden in back. And so we're putting together a gardening project. If you can stay back after class and help with the gardening project, you can do that. And then you'll have lunch together. So if you can, stay back and help us with gardening and enjoy a lunch. And we'll conclude with our prayers.
Patigam Vamahe Kavinga Vina Mupamashravastamam Jeshtarajam Brahmana Brahmanas Patahana Shrenvan Utabisida Sadhanam Om Mahaganapataye Namaha Ishvaro Guru Ratmeti Murti Veda Vibhagine Vyomavad Vyapta Dehaya Dakshina Murtaye Namaha Vasudeva Sutam Devam Kamsachanuramardhanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishnam Vande Jagat Guru Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha Sarve santu niramayah, sarve bhadrani pashyantu, ma kashchid dukha bhag bhavet, asato ma satgamaya, tamaso ma jyotirgamaya, mrityor.